You are listening to continuing coverage of the trial of Chad Daybell from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Let's go back to the courtroom.
All right. Thank you, counsel. We are going to take a mid-afternoon recess here to allow jurors to use the restroom, et cetera. So we'll take about 20 minutes, and then the state does have another witness lined up after that. So I'll please rise for the jurors.
All right, please. District Court to get in session.
Thank you. Please be seated. Have the jurors brought in, please.
All right, please.
Please, our president accounted for, Your Honor.
Thank you. Please be seated. All right, we are back from the afternoon recess. CR 22-21-16-23, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell. And I believe the state's ready to recall Detective Werther. Is that correct, Ms. Blake?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, if you'd like to inquire further on direct, I'll note the detective's previously been sworn today and his testimony and is still under oath, and you can continue with direct examination.
Thank you, Your Honor. The state would ask to go back to publishing State's Exhibit 43.
Fingers crossed.
And Detective Werther, I think we'd left off with this was less than ideal. Was yes. That in reference to the tech problems?
It was.
All right. If we turn our attention back to this slide, can you remind us what we were looking at here?
Yes, we were looking at a record of an incoming text to the 0143 AT&T number that's been attributed to Chad Daybell from Lori Vallow's 9562 number at 1239 on July the 11th, 2019.
And if we advance to the next slide.
Won't you do it? And bye. Okay. Yep.
What are we seeing here?
This is the from 750 to... this seems to be out of order. Standby. Yeah, we're out of order. We're back much earlier in the day in ground that we've already covered. We've seen these slides before. Pardon me, because this is going to take us through the Burger King again. From memory, I think it was slide 81 where we ought to be.
And in trying to keep the tech happy, I'm just trying to get back to that slide.
This is where we ought to be.
And can you tell us what we're seeing here?
This is showing the mapping of a voice call from Lori Vallow's 9562 phone to the 0143 phone. That 1M45S signifies that it's a 1 minute, 45 second duration call. It's going to zoom in and show the mapping on Lori's device is once again essentially co-located with the device location from Charles Vallow's phone. And there we see the details of the call with the duration rendered in seconds, but that's 1 minute and 45 seconds.
And if we go to the next slide.
This is going to proceed showing the location data as Charles' device describes a path east and south. And then the next call record that is located along with the device location. This time we're looking at an H-plane for Alex Cox's phone records indicating there was a connection to a tower in that area, and that area also is the same area where Charles' device is. So this shows more than likely that the device used by Alex Cox is in the same area as Charles Vallow's device.
And this is almost 1 o'clock.
Yep, 12:57 for the location from Charles Vallow's device and 12:59 for the voice call.
And if we go to the next slide.
Here we have an outgoing text from the 0143 number to Lori Vallow's 9562, and this is at 1311, which is 1:11 p.m.
So another communication between Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow on July 11th.
Between their devices, yes.
And if we go to the next slide. What are we seeing here?
These are more data points from Charles Vallow's phone. It shows it arriving in the area of Alex Cox's home there on 1658 East Shari Street in Santan Valley. And the time is going to be 1326.
And if we go to the next slide.
This is another text, this time incoming to the 0143 number from Lori Vallow's 9562 number. And at 1339.
If we go to the next slide.
Text outgoing at 1343 between the same two numbers.
And the next slide.
This is showing the mapping from Charles's device and then a rather large H-plane for Lori Vallow's device that includes the Cox residents, the incoming call from Melanie Boudreau's number to Lori Vallow's number for a 5-minute, 58-second call.
And if we go to the next slide.
Another text, this one outgoing from the 0143 number to Lori Vallow's 9562.
And the next slide.
This is the H plane that we left off with, and it's going to transition to show that the H planes for both Lori's phone and Alex's phone are in the same general area. And I believe that's the next slide. My apologies. This one just shows an H plane for Alex's for an incoming call. That negative one's a default value. I'm not sure who called. It isn't in the records.
And if we go to the next slide.
This shows Charles's location data still in that area. And then location data from Lori Vallow's 5452 number with an H plane that includes that residence. And this is at 1407 and 1408.
And there's an indication there that a number associated with Lori called Detective Inkland's desk.
Yes, Detective Inkland, the member of my team now. She was on the robbery homicide team at the time and involved in this investigation. And she's the one who received that phone call.
And do you know if she's also the detective that interviewed Lori Vallow?
Yes, she is.
And if we go to the next slide.
So this shows that and remember that there are two phones associated with Ms. Lori Vallow. So the 9562 H plane is the top one. The 5452 is the bottom one. Shows that they're overlapping and they're within 2 minutes of one another, basically showing that they're in a similar area that includes that residence.
And was Charles' phone also located within that vicinity?
It was. I don't believe that the data point within this very narrow time frame, but it's been located in that location, and we'll see data coming up shortly that shows it still is.
And then I see a note down there, a number associated with Lori Vallow called the Valley of the Sun Mortuary.
Yes. Yeah, so highlighting this number here, if you take that number, which is 480-895-9232. I'm going to advance to the next slide now. That's the phone number for the Valley of the Sun Mortuary.
And what are we seeing here?
Ongoing text communication. This is an incoming text between Lori Vallow's 9562 and the 0143 number at 1424.
Judge, could I have some foundation as to whether that's an outgoing or incoming text from
Ms. Blake? Do you want to inquire on that?
Detective Werther, were you able to determine if that was a text from Lori to Lori's device to Chad's device or Chad's device to Lori's device?
So it's incoming to Chad's device. If you look here below the number, it reads incoming SMS, which is derived from the raw records. And it indicates the target number. So this is being received by the 0143 number, but because it's incoming, it's connected to the 9562 number.
And if we go to the next slide.
This is ongoing text showing an outgoing between the two same numbers, which indicates the 0143 would be sending a text outgoing, and it's at 1424.
And again, we were unable to locate the content of these text messages. Is that your understanding?
Correct. Typically, they're not preserved for very long, if at all, by providers. And I have not seen the content of any of these messages.
And if we advance to the next slide, what are we seeing here?
This is ongoing text. So this is an incoming text to the 0143 number from the same number, and it is at 1428.
And if we go to the next slide.
This picks up with those overlapping H planes down in Arizona, shows more of Charles Vallow's location data near the Cox residence. And it advances to an H plane at 1428. This is an incoming voice call from the 0143 number to Lori Vallow's 9562 number, and it lasts 11 minutes and 13 seconds.
And if we go to the next slide.
This is just showing the same call, but showing it as it was found in both record sets. This is showing the mapping related to where Mr. Daybell's device was at the time of this call so that we see both locations.
And the device associated with Chad Daybell is showing as somewhere in Idaho at that point.
Yes, that's right. So same call.
And what are we seeing here?
This is going to advance to where the device associated with Alex Cox calls Detective Inkland's desk. There it is. And it shows the location data extracted from Charles' device is in that same general area where that H plane is. And this is the call to Detective Inkland's desk from Alex Cox's device.
And if we advance to the next slide.
Well, this should show The animation appears not to be loading.
Would you like me to try from my end?
Yes, let me back up. If not, the static images will ultimately show the data anyway.
Could it just move to the next one?
Yeah, but I think it's all right. It's just going to, it was transitioning to the next thing. So to continue and use people's time, well, this is the same data from the last slide and then also showing, this is the day showing Charles Vallow's extracted location data, the call to Detective Inclan's desk, and then adding in a call received a minute later to Lori Vallow's phone from Melanie Boudreau, showing that all of these devices are in the same general area.
And if we advance to the next slide.
So this will show, and it may, we're having computer issues today, but the animation's likely not going to play, but it will still show us where we're going. The Vallow, the Charles Vallow device will leave the area of the Alex Cox residence and arrives, as we see on this next still image, at 1445 hours in the general area is when it leaves the general area of Alex Cox's residence. And then it's going to move on to the Four Peaks residence where it is turned over to detectives. There we are. At 1511, it's in the area of the Four Peaks residence where detectives took possession of that device from Ms. Vallow.
And is that how you came to ultimately look at an extraction from that phone?
Yes, that's right. It's, as far as I know, still in Chandler Police property and evidence.
And what are we seeing here?
This is an H-plane showing, once again, the service area for Alex Cox's device is back in the area of the Four Peaks Place address. And there is an outgoing call to a phone number that on the internet was associated with USAA. It is a 10-minute, 55-second call.
And then what are we seeing here?
At 1602, we see a call between, specifically outgoing from Alex Cox's device to Lori Vallow's 9562. The H-planes are not overlapping. It appears that they are most likely not in the same place, the devices at this point.
And then if we go to the next one?
This is further text communication and outgoing text from the 0143 to Lori Vallow's 9562 at 1610. And then an incoming between the two devices at 1646. This is a voice call outgoing from the 0143 number to Lori Vallow's 9562. It is a 30-minute, 13-second call, and it is at 1742, 542 p.m.
And if we move on?
Okay. This is that same call, but from the other end, showing that at the time of that call, the service area for the Vallow device is mapping again in the area of the Four Peaks residence while they're on that call. And then this is an incoming text from Ms. Vallow's 9562 to the 0143 number at 1816 hours, 616 p.m. And then an outgoing text in response at 1857. And then at 1909, we have an outgoing text again from 0143 to that same number of Ms. Vallow's. Then a voice call outgoing from the 0143 number to Ms. Vallow 9562, 10 minutes and 59 seconds at 7:10 p.m. Okay. This is that same call mapped again on the Arizona side from Ms. Vallow's records showing again in the area of the Four Peaks residence while that call is happening. Another outgoing voice call, but this one from the 0143 number to that Valley of the Sun mortuary number that we saw earlier. This is at 7:34 p.m., and the call lasts 7 minutes and 14 seconds. In my analysis, the number other than Ms. Vallow's.
And Ms. Vallow had called the Valley, or a device associated with her, had called the Valley of the Sun mortuary earlier in the day?
Correct.
And now the device, or a device associated with Chad Daybell, placed a call as well.
That's right. Now it is 7:50 p.m. and there's an incoming text from Ms. Vallow's 9562 to the 0143 number. And then at 7:52 p.m., an outgoing text from the 0143 to the 9562. And then there is an outgoing 7-second call from 0143 to the 9562. That is at 7:54 p.m. And the 9562 number texts the 0143 number at 7:54 p.m. And then there is a 13-minute and 2-second call outgoing from 0143 to 9562 at 7:54 p.m. And I believe it's just going to show us the mapping on the other end on the next slide. Yes, this is that same call in Arizona showing the service area for Ms. Vallow's device in the area of Four Peaks. And coincidentally, around that same time, there is an H-plane, a service area for Mr. Cox's device, and it also is in an area that covers the Four Peaks address. Ongoing text communication, we are up to 9:10 p.m., an outgoing text from 0143 to 9562, another outgoing text at 2135, 9:35 p.m. between the same numbers, and that brings us to the end of the exhibit.
And what are we seeing on this slide?
These were some takeaways from my analysis based on the claims that we had discussed previously, indicating, as you see on the screen, that it is very likely that Mr. Vallow's device arrived around 7:32 at the Four Peaks address and left around 7:50. And there are multiple instances where that device is then co-located with Ms. Vallow's devices and also her known location from video and other sources. So that seems to support the claim that she left the Four Peaks address with Mr. Vallow's device, which, as I understand it, was claimed to have been after the shooting had occurred. If all of that is true, then there's at least a 45-minute delay between that event and 911 being called. Otherwise, if it wasn't true, then it would be hard to see how they could have witnessed the event as they claimed. And then there are the communications that we've seen between the device associated with Mr. Daybell and with Ms. Vallow through the day and the call to the Valley of the Sun mortuary.
And at some point, as part of the investigation, did you learn that Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow were engaged in some form of extramarital affair, or there were at least allegations of that?
That's my understanding.
But on this particular day, these communications were the day Charles Vallow died, correct?
That's right.
And the communications between Chad and Lori were throughout the day?
Yes, as we've seen.
They started prior to Charles arriving at Lori's residence?
Yes, I believe the first one's in the 6 a.m. hour, Arizona time.
And there was a text from Chad to Lori around the same time that Charles Vallow arrived at the residence?
From that device to Lori's device, yes.
I have no further questions.
All right. Once you're ready, Mr. Pryor, you can cross
the bridge. Thank you, Judge.
You may.
Officer, you testified earlier that there were text messages and phone conversations throughout the day between Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell. Is that right?
Between those devices, yes.
And what you didn't look at is the history of the phone correspondence between these two folks, did you?
I did not personally do that.
You didn't look back what their pattern of communication was even a week before that, correct?
I did not.
And a week after that, you didn't look at that as well, did you?
I did not.
You are aware, though, by your analysis, that Lori Vallow called a mortuary sometime around 2 o'clock, and then there was a preceding number of calls and texts, and then Chad Daybell called the same mortuary, correct?
Yes, that's what the records show.
You happen to review the mortuary call that Chad Daybell made to the Sun Valley mortuary? Did you listen to that?
Oh, no, I've not listened to the audio recording.
Okay. So you don't know the nature of what Mr. Daybell said about obtaining further information or letting them know about what... You don't know anything about that, right?
I'm aware the recording exists. I have not listened to the recording.
And you're aware that the two of them were engaged in an extramarital affair?
That's what I've been told, yes.
Okay. Now, the issue of cell tower, would you agree with me that cell tower coverage is the least effective of the ways to obtain data of the location of a cell phone?
I don't know that it's the least effective, but it obviously has an error rate greater than, for example, the GPS that we looked at, if that's what you're asking.
Okay. And the best way to determine a phone's location is actually to have the phone itself. Would that be fair?
I would agree with that.
Okay. Now, I noticed during this process that it appeared that Mr. Daybell was traveling to somewhere in Utah and then traveling back that day, correct?
That's what the device seems to be doing, yes.
Okay. And there are a number of these calls that are text messages and calls that are rather short in nature, correct?
I don't know the length of the texts. But as far as the calls go, the durations were all up on the screen for sure.
And what you also don't know is whether these calls were being received in due time or whether there was some sort of delay because of the traveling within the Utah-Idaho area out there, correct?
How do you mean a delay?
Well, phone reception. You're not able, through your analysis, just on these numbers, to determine whether or not these calls actually were successful in any kind of communication. Isn't that true?
The duration can give an indication, of course, for a longer duration, then it's more likely that a voice call took place. But if I'm understanding you right, yes, it's possible, for example, that some of these went to voicemail. Absolutely.
And Mr. Daybell was, and you know where Springville, Utah is, correct?
I'm not very familiar with Utah, so no.
Okay. You know where Salt Lake City is?
Roughly.
And you looked on the map and you know that it's a distance between Salt Lake City and St. Anthony, Idaho, correct?
Yes, that's right.
Are you familiar with the topography and the area out there in terms of the quality of phone reception in that area?
I am not very familiar, no.
Okay. Now, from what I understand from your testimony, is that at least what you're suggesting is that based on Charles Vallow's phone and the delay reporting to 911, it's suggesting that Lori Vallow was present at the time Alex Cox shot Charles Vallow. Is that correct?
Partly, if I might elaborate. Okay. What I would say is that if Ms. Vallow makes the claim that she's present for the shooting, which I'm told she did, then the data suggests that either that claim is wrong, she wasn't actually there, or she was there. There was a very long delay before 911 was called. Either of those are possibilities in my mind.
Okay. And are those are really the two distinct possibilities, correct?
Yes, I think so.
So either Ms. Vallow is lying about being there when Alex Cox shot Charles Vallow, or the other scenario you suggested, correct?
Yes, that's right.
And if I noticed that on your display, you included that Tylee, Ryan, and J.J. Vallow were also present at the time. Is that right?
That's the claim that was made.
Okay. And there's no indication that by way of phone records or otherwise that Lori Vallow took J.J. Vallow or Tylee Ryan anywhere else. Is that right?
I'm not aware of any location other than the ones that we examined.
Now, I looked at the tape of the Burger King, and you had mentioned that you saw at least one person in the vehicle. When I examined it appeared there were at least three people in the vehicle. Is it possible there were three people in the vehicle at the Burger King?
I'd say it's possible and indeed likely.
Oh, and indeed what?
Likely that there were three people.
That's all I have, Judge. Thank you.
All right. Mm-hmm. Any redirect?
And Detective Werther, you were asked if some of the calls maybe didn't go through right away. Do you recall that?
Yes.
In your presentation, did you denote the duration of the calls that you were able to locate?
Yes. When there was a voice call, I tried to put up what the duration was so that those viewing the presentation would know how long those calls were.
And were at least some of those calls of such a duration that you would believe those to be calls that were received where a conversation occurred?
I would.
And again, conversations between Chad and Lori began approximately 6:06 that morning.
That's the earliest one, yes.
And they continued throughout the day?
Yes.
And you learned Chad and Lori were having an extramarital affair, correct?
Judge asked and answered.
That's my understanding.
And on July 11th of 2019, what call did you respond out to again?
That was the a call involving a shooting incident, the fatal shooting of Charles Vallow.
I have no further questions.
All right. That will conclude the testimony then of Detective Werther. So is he going to remain under subpoena from the state?
The state would release him from his subpoena.
What about the defense?
Judge, I haven't subpoenaed the detective. I have no intention of calling him back.
Okay, that concludes your testimony then. Thank you for appearing and testifying today. You may go ahead and step down.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, at this time, based on the nature of the testimony, the court's got a limiting instruction that I'm going to reread to the jurors. I've read this before, and this will also be included in your final instructions for deliberations. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, during the course of this trial, evidence has been introduced for the purpose of showing that the defendant or an alleged co-conspirator has committed acts other than that for which the defendant is on trial. Such evidence, if believed, is not to be considered by you to prove the defendant's character or that the defendant has a disposition to commit crimes Rather, such evidence may be considered by you only for the limited purpose of proving the defendant's motive, opportunity, intent, plan, or absence of mistake or accident. So that's the limiting instruction. With that then, let me inquire from the state, given the time where we're at, does the state intend to call or seek to call another witness this afternoon?
Your Honor, can we just briefly, I know people are probably getting tired of the sidebars, but if we could just briefly chat about the schedule.
Yeah, let's do that quickly in a sidebar. Thank you, counsel. All right, counsel, thank you for conferring with the court. We are going to go ahead and conclude with evidence for the day and take a recess until tomorrow. As I mentioned, we'll go until 2 o'clock tomorrow. There's one other matter the court will take up outside the presence of the jurors, just off outside the presence of the public, just with the attorneys, but on the record here as well. So for those reasons, I think this is a good time to break for the day. So ladies and gentlemen of the jury, again, thank you for your attentiveness today. And I will advise you, as I have at the end of each day, please don't discuss this case with anyone else or amongst yourselves. Wait to do that until the time for deliberations as well. Don't do anything to investigate or look the case up in any way. Or if you see the case in any sort of media coverage, news, et cetera, on your devices, please avoid looking into that. And that way you'll be able to sign your declarations in the morning that you've complied with the instruction. So thank you again. And we will commence again tomorrow morning with additional evidence and a new witness tomorrow, starting at 8:30 at the normal time. So with that in mind, we will be in recess for the day. And thank you also those in attendance today for complying with the court's conduct orders.
All right, please.
All right, thanks everyone. Counsel, I'll just meet with you briefly in the room there with the court reporter, if we can, just to put one thing.
There's more to come in the trial of Chad Daybell. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage right here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.